Welcome to Radioactive Youth Media's podcast. I'm Paul Kiefer.
And I'm Julia Furukawa. Today we'll be talking about food, again, but more specifically, access to food. Food is something that we all need to survive, so I believe that everyone should have equal access to it. But unfortunately, that's not really always a possibility. And today we're going to find out why.
To give some context to this problem, let's start with a review of agricultural history in the U.S. To help the economy recover during the Great Depression, the federal government started to pay farmers for their crops.
But only certain crops. There's a term for these. They're called commodity crops. And they're ones that are easy to grow, like wheat, corn, and soy. This meant that crops that were harder to grow, like vegetables, were barely funded, so there was little incentive for farmers to grow them at all.
Farmers began to plant more of the subsidized crops and fewer vegetables and fruits, which made them more expensive.
Nowadays, growing cash crops is so popular that 84 million acres of farmland in the U.S. are dedicated only to growing corn.
Commodity farming is such a big part of our economy that we spend $19 billion in subsidies each year. That leaves smaller farms that grow non-subsidized crops struggling to keep up and keeps prices high.
And if you think about the foods that are generally made from these commodity crops, they're not usually the healthiest options. Potato chips, breads, crackers, and anything with corn syrup in it, like candy. They're the cheapest, too. This makes eating healthier even harder for those on a budget.
We were curious to find out more about hunger, so we decided to ask an expert.
So I'm Donna Johnson, and I actually study the impact of policies and environmental change on nutrition, what people eat, what their health outcomes are, how they feel about it. I work at the University of Washington on the Center for Public Health Nutrition.
We asked her what hunger looks like here in Washington.
The state of Washington has very high rates of hunger. When they first started measuring hunger back in the 90s, we were the second worst in the whole country compared to Mississippi. Mississippi had the worst, which of course is the kind of thing we all expect, but Washington was the second worst. And a bunch of folks have worked really hard to improve hunger in Washington, and we sort of got better and better and better till we were in the middle of the pack until the recession hit. And now we're kind of running in the low teens, so I think the last time around we were 14 or 15th worst in the country.
Here at home, 1 in 6 Washingtonians relies on SNAP, which is the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, or food stamps. That's slightly higher than the national average of 1 in 7. And we tend to think that we're really healthy here in Seattle, but Dr. Johnson informed us that this is not always the case.
Seattle itself, we certainly have hungry families, but because it's such an affluent area, we have less hunger than a lot of other big cities. And actually, we see hunger sort of moving out of Seattle along with the gentrification of Seattle. It goes with poverty. So, you know, families in the south end of the county tend to, because that's where a lot of families who live in poverty can afford to live, they've moved down there.
Dr. Johnson says many factors like age, health, and level of income can contribute to having not enough money for food. But one you might not think about as much is location. Food deserts are areas that have been identified by the U.S. Department of Agriculture as urban neighborhoods and rural towns without ready access to fresh, healthy, and affordable food. So we wanted to know, are there food deserts in Seattle?
As I understand it, because of our unique geography, we don't have food deserts the way some place like Detroit might have them, or places that just have miles and miles of really low-income areas. Because, you know, the wealthy people live near the water, and they live at the top of the hill with the view, and those people are going to be well-served by grocery stores because, you know, they spend their money and buy food. So our areas of poverty, when you map them in Seattle, they're just not huge swaths, right? They're down in the valley, and so the people tend to have geographic access to grocery stores because of the way we are. You know, there's so many bodies of water with wonderful houses around them and hills with views, and that we just don't have, you know, like a 10-mile stretch of neighborhood with no healthy food because we don't have 10-mile stretches without really cool places to live, basically. So we don't have that kind of food desert as the phrase was first meant to be. We have sort of functional food deserts.
We were interested in knowing a little more about the adverse effects of food insecurity. When a family is food insecure, it means that they don't know where their next meal will come from. There are also numerous health issues that are associated with it.
Higher rates of obesity, higher rates of some health conditions, higher rates of kids not doing well in school, having trouble getting to school, school attendance, and then being present once they're at school. So it impacts your whole life to have hunger in your household during childhood.
And Professor Johnson says these effects continue to take their toll well into adulthood.
Things that happen to you when you're really young, especially in the preschool years, stay with you for the rest of your life. And hunger is one of those experiences. It somehow reprograms people's brains to be more at risk of a lot of mental health issues and other health issues. So for the very severe kind of hunger, which means basically your kids go without meals sometimes during the month, it's got a very profound effect. As you might imagine, you know, not knowing whether you're going to go home and have dinner or not.
This is an issue that disproportionately affects people of color, elderly people, and disabled people. This isn't just a food issue, it's a social issue, and those dynamics are worthy of their own podcast. A source of support for families and children who are food insecure is the National School Lunch Program, which was established by President Harry Truman in 1946 to combat child hunger in the U.S. But there's a problem.
If you ask any school nutrition director, they would tell you they don't have enough money to put the kinds of food they would like to on the table for kids day after day. There isn't a whole lot of money in the system. There's the money that goes into actually purchasing the food. There's also high labor costs, within a school district often don't get the kind of support and respect they deserve.
People tried to advocate for change.
There's been recent, well, in the last two or three years, changes to the requirements for school lunch, so they are more nutritious than they used to be. There's a requirement for more fruits and vegetables. There's a requirement around portion sizes. There's been a movement to get some of the sodium out of school lunches. All good positive things, but they've been real challenges for local school food service directors to actually get in place because of the money issues and the time issues and the labor issues, and they don't have the facilities to cook from scratch, et cetera, et cetera.
The very same families whose kids rely on the National School Lunch Program for at least a meal a day oftentimes receive government aid to buy groceries through SNAP. As Dr. Johnson explains, even though the program is designed to help those in need, the benefits don't always fit that need.
So it's based on this thing called the Thrifty Food Plan, which takes the Dietary Guidelines for Americans into account, and it calculates how much it would really cost to come up with the nutrients and the energy to feed your family in a healthy way. The problem with the Thrifty Food Plan is it assumes that you've got a functional kitchen. So if you're living in some kind of transitional housing or you don't have housing, you're not going to be able to cook refrigerate your food. It assumes transportation to a store where you can buy things at a reasonable price. You're not buying at a convenience store. It assumes some cooking skills. It assumes time for cooking. It takes about 16 hours a week of food preparation to prepare the Thrifty Food Plan, and very few Americans spend that much time in the kitchen anymore. So there's a lot of assumptions built in, which is why it's usually not enough money to pay for the way most families need to structure their eating.
It seems to me like the system has a few fundamental flaws.
To see how much SNAP benefits actually provide, we did some research. So I tallied it up, and an individual in Washington receives roughly $2.85 for an entire day's worth of food through SNAP.
We decided to do a test. I took $2.85 and went to Safeway, and I took $2.85 and went to Jack in the Box. And here's what I found. The Jack in the Box was full of people, and the man ahead of me was apparently a frequent visitor. He actually knew the staff. I ordered the chicken sandwich and two tacos.
May I have two tacos and a chicken sandwich?
In total, I spent $2.39 for a 750-calorie meal, and then I walked across the parking lot to a Safeway grocery store. It wasn't really easy to find fresh or healthy food for anything less than $5 at Safeway, but I eventually managed to find a packet of baby carrots and a bagel. The total price of my bagel and carrots came to about $2.10, and they added up to about 300 calories. I immediately gave my two meals to homeless people who were sitting within a block of both the grocery store and the restaurant.
Are any of y'all hungry? Because I have, like, extra food.
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Thank you.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, you're good.
It's a chicken sandwich and some tacos. Have a nice day.
I couldn't really figure out how to eat healthy with SNAP benefits at a grocery store or a fast food restaurant. There are healthy options available, but in neither place are they affordable.
In order for widespread consumption of healthy foods to become a reality, I think we're going to have to make some major changes to our current agriculture and welfare models. I think it's partially about making healthier choices as individuals, but if we want to be able to find healthy food at a reasonable price, I think we should change the way we subsidize.
Since all this has been pretty depressing, we asked Professor Johnson to share with us a few success stories, because there are people trying to fix this problem.
So they've been doing a program in Seattle that we've evaluated the last couple of summers called Fresh Bucks, which is the same thing. You come to the market, you swipe your card, you get, you have 10 bucks deducted from your account, and then you get tokens for another $10 worth of produce.
You can even get food in the form of a CSA basket full of fresh, local produce.
They're handing them out to low-income families once a week when they pick their kids up from childcare. So they're kind of taking away all the transportation stuff. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to pay anything. They have subsidized baskets right now and are thinking about ways to sustain it.
It seems like eliminating food insecurity and hunger will be a really long process, but Professor Johnson had wise words for us.
So it's hard. There are many aspects to the issue. There's a whole bunch of reasons why we eat the way we do, and you can just kind of try to make it easier and easier and easier to eat healthy foods, but it's going to take a long time. I think we have to have patience.
This has been a Radioactive Youth Media podcast. Thanks to our team, Rogelia Sanchez, Jack Paradise, Mimansa Dogra, Lola Garcia, Aisha Burka, and Gerardo Ramos. And special thanks to Professor Donna Johnson and our editor, Jenny Asarno.
You can like us on Facebook at Radioactive Youth Media and follow us on Twitter at KUOW Radioactive. Subscribe wherever you download your podcasts. I'm Julia Furukawa.
And I'm Paul Kiever. Thanks for listening and have a lovely day. Thank you.